Chapter 10 Wyatt's Torch.
God have mercy on us, ma'am, said the clerk of the Hall of Records. Nobody knows who owns that factory now. I guess nobody will ever know it.
The clerk sat at a desk in a ground floor office where dust lay undisturbed on the files, and few visitors ever called. He looked at the shining automobile parked outside his window, in the muddy square that had once been the center of a prosperous county seat. He looked with a faint, wistful wonder at his two unknown visitors.
Why?
Asked Dagny. He pointed helplessly at the mass of papers he had taken out of the files.
The court will have to decide who owns it, which I don't think any court can do, if a court ever gets to it. I don't think it will.
Why? What happened?
Well, it was sold out. The 20th Century, I mean. The 20th Century Motor Company. It was sold twice at the same time and to two different sets of owners. That was sort of a big scandal at the time, 2 years ago. And now it's just, he pointed, just a bunch of paper lying around waiting for a court hearing. I don't see how any judge will be able to untangle any property rights out of it, or any right at all.
Would you tell me, please, just what happened?
Well, the last legal owner of the factory was the People's Mortgage Company of Rome, Wisconsin. That's the town the other side of the factory, 30 miles north. That mortgage company was a sort of noisy outfit that did a lot of advertising about easy credit. Mark Yontz was the head of it. Nobody knew where he came from, and nobody knows where he's gone to now. But what they discovered the morning after the People's Mortgage Company collapsed was that Mark Yontz had sold the 20th Century Motor Factory to a bunch of suckers from South Dakota, and that he'd also given it as collateral for a loan from a bank in Illinois. And when they took a look at the factory, they discovered that he'd moved all the machinery out and sold it piecemeal. God only knows where and to whom. So it seems like everybody owns the place, and nobody. That's how it stands now. The South Dakotans and the bank and the attorney for the creditors of the People's Mortgage Company all suing one another, all claiming this factory, and nobody having the right to move a wheel in it, except that there's no wheels left to move.
Did Mark Yontz operate the factory before he sold it?
Lord, no, ma'am. He wasn't the kind that ever operates anything. He didn't want to make money, only to get it. Guess he got it, too. More than anyone could have made out of that factory.
He wondered why the blonde, hard-faced man who sat with the woman in front of his desk looked grimly out the window at their car, at a large object wrapped in canvas, roped tightly under the raised cover of the car's luggage compartment. What happened to the factory records?
Which do you mean, ma'am?
Their production records, their work records, their personnel files.
Oh, there's nothing left of that now. There's been a lot of looting going on. All the mixed owners grabbed what furniture or things they could haul out of there, even if the sheriff did put a padlock on the door. The papers and stuff like that, I guess it was all taken by the scavengers from Starnesville. That's the place down in the valley where they're having it pretty tough these days. They burn the stuff for kindling, most likely.
Is there anyone left here who used to work in the factory? Asked Reardon.
No, sir, not around here. They all live down in Starnesville.
All of them? Whispered Dagny. She was thinking of the ruins. The engineers, too?
Yes, ma'am. That was the factory town. They've all gone, long ago.
Do you happen to remember the names of any men who worked there?
No, ma'am.
What owner was the last to operate the factory? Asked Reardon.
I couldn't say, sir. There's been so much trouble up there, and the place has changed hands so many times since old Jed Starnes died. He's the man who built the factory. He made this whole part of the country, I guess. He died 12 years ago.
Can you give us the names of all the owners since?
No, sir. We had a fire in the old courthouse about 3 years ago, and all the old records are gone. I don't know where you could trace them now.
You don't know how this Mark Yontz happened to acquire the factory?
Yes, I know that. He bought it from Mayor Bascom of Rome. How Mayor Bascom happened to own it, I don't know.
Where is Mayor Bascom now?
Still there, in Rome.
Thank you very much, said Reardon, rising. We'll call on him.
They were at the door when the clerk asked,
What is it you're looking for, sir?
We're looking for a friend of ours, said Reardon.
A friend we've lost, who used to work in that factory.
Mayor Bascom of Rome, Wisconsin, leaned back in his chair. His chest and stomach formed a pear-shaped outline under his soiled shirt. The air was a mixture of sun and dust, pressing heavily upon the porch of his house. He waved his arm, the ring on his finger flashing a large topaz of poor quality.
"No use. No use, lady. Absolutely no use," he said. "Would be just a waste of your time trying to question the folks around here. There's no factory people left, and nobody that would remember much about them. So many families have moved away that what's left here is plain no good, if I do say so myself, plain no good. Just being mayor of a bunch of trash."
He had offered chairs to his two visitors, but he did not mind it if the lady preferred to stand at the porch railing. He leaned back, studying her long-lined figure. High-class merchandise, he thought. But then the man with her was obviously rich. Dagny stood looking at the streets of Rome. There were houses, sidewalks, lampposts, even a sign advertising soft drinks. But they looked as if it were only now a matter of inches and hours before the town would reach the stage of Starnesville.
"No, there's no factory records left," said Mayor Bascom. "If that's what you want to find, lady, give it up. It's like chasing leaves in a storm now, just like leaves in a storm. Who cares about papers? At a time like this, what people save is good, solid material objects. One's got to be practical."
Through the dusty window panes, they could see the living room of his house. There were Persian rugs on a buckled wooden floor, a portable bar with chromium strips against a wall stained by the seepage of last year's rains, an expensive radio with an old kerosene lamp placed on top of it.
"Sure, it's me that sold the factory to Mark Yonts. Mark was a nice fellow, a nice, lively, energetic fellow. Sure, he did trim a few corners, but who doesn't? Of course, he went a bit too far. That I didn't expect. I thought he was smart enough to stay within the law, whatever's left of it nowadays."
Mayor Bascom smiled, looking at them in a manner of placid frankness. His eyes were shrewd, without intelligence, his smile good-natured, without kindness.
"I don't think you folks are detectives," he said. "But even if you were, it wouldn't matter to me. I didn't get any rake-off from Mark. He didn't let me in on any of his deals. I haven't any idea where he's gone to now."
He sighed.
"I liked that fellow. Wish he'd stayed around. Never mind the Sunday sermons. He had to live, didn't he? He was no worse than anybody, only smarter. Some get caught at it and some don't. That's the only difference. Nope, I didn't know what he was going to do with it when he bought that factory. Sure, he paid me quite a bit more than the old booby trap was worth. Sure, he was doing me a favor when he bought it. Nope, I didn't put any pressure on him to make him buy it. Wasn't necessary. I'd done him a few favors before. There's plenty of laws that's sort of made of rubber, and a mayor's in a position to stretch them a bit for a friend. Well, what the hell? That's the only way anybody ever gets rich in this world."
He glanced at the luxurious black car.
"As you ought to know."
"You were telling us about the factory," said Reardon, trying to control himself.
"What I can't stand," said Mayor Bascom, "is people who talk about principles. No principle ever filled anybody's milk bottle. The only thing that counts in life is solid material assets. It's no time for theories when everything is falling to pieces around us. Well, me, I don't aim to go under. Let them keep their ideas, and I'll take the factory. I don't want ideas. I just want my 3 square meals a day."
"Why did you buy that factory?"
"Why does anybody buy any business? To squeeze whatever can be squeezed out of it. I know a good chance when I see it. It was a bankruptcy sale, and nobody much who'd want to bid on the old mess. So I got the place for peanuts. Didn't have to hold it long, either. Mark took it off my hands in 2-3 months. Sure, it was a smart deal, if I say so myself. No big business tycoon could have done any better with it."
"Was the factory operating when you took it over?"
"No, it was shut down."
"Did you attempt to reopen it?"
"Not me. I'm a practical person."
"Can you recall the names of any men who worked there?"
"Nope, never met them."
"Did you move anything out of the factory?"
"Well, I'll tell you. I took a look around, and what I liked was old Jed's desk, old Jed Starnes. He was a real big shot in his time. Wonderful desk, solid mahogany, so I carted it home. and some executive, don't know who he was, had a stall shower in his bathroom, the like of which I never saw. A glass door with a mermaid cut in the glass, real artwork, and hot stuff, too, hotter than any oil painting. So I had that shower lifted and moved here. What the hell, I owned it, didn't I? I was entitled to get something valuable out of that factory.